From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A series of dueling press conferences has been underway since the findings were released Tuesday by the Dutch Safety Board about the downing of Malaysia Air Flight MH17 over East Ukraine in July of last year. We begin with this report from CCTV's Hu Shu Xiu.
Ukraine welcomes the Dutch findings on Flight MH17. It released its own report saying the missile was shot from the rebel-controlled region.
Голландці не говорять про те, і не називають прізвищ.
The Dutch do not talk about those responsible and do not name names. But here's the important information. It was a Russian missile from a Russian box system in the territory occupied by Russians.
Russia takes the opposite view. Almazantay, Russian manufacturer of the book surface-to-air missile system, rejects the conclusions of the Dutch commission. The missile maker has presented its own findings at a news conference in Moscow. It has carried out two experiments, simulating the scene when the Buk missile hits the fuselage of a passenger plane. The first experiment was conducted on July 31st. They say they determined the exact place where the missile was fired from the comprehensive analysis of the damage to the plane.
Сегодня мы можем однозначно сказать.
Today we can definitely say and will show in presentation if the Boeing 777 was shot down with air defense missile system Buk. It was hit by a missile 9M38 from the Zarochensky settlement.
That region was controlled by the Ukrainian army. A second experiment last Wednesday had the same conclusion. Almazantay said the plane was hit by a 9M38 Buk missile produced in the Soviet Union, and this type of missile is no longer in use by the Russian army. But the Ukrainian army is still using it. Novikov says the company is willing to hand the results of their experiments to international investigators to get more objective conclusions. Hu Shuqiao, CCTV.
That report from the Dutch Safety Board was welcomed by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who used the occasion to pay tribute to the 298 victims of the air crash. The Secretary General said that, from the very beginning, the UN supported efforts to find out what happened to the downed airliner. Veronica Reeves filed this report from the United Nations.
Following the release of the report, the Secretary General said he supported the need for a full investigation into the tragedy, while underlining that those found responsible must be held accountable. The report said that MH17 was hit by a Buk missile as it traveled from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur nearly 15 months ago. The International Civil Aviation Organization welcomed the release of the report and said it would review its recommendations. The specialized UN agency had established a task force immediately following the disaster to look into the risks to civil aviation arising from conflict zones. Veronica Reeves, United Nations.
But despite the fact that the report did not fix blame and left open the possibility that the missile was fired from areas in East Ukraine that were under control of the Ukrainian military at the time, the U.S. State Department has continued to say that the report supports its accusation that the plane was downed by what they have repeatedly called Russian-backed separatists. State Department spokesperson Mark Toner Tuesday said that the U.S. welcomed the findings of the Dutch Safety Board. He said the Dutch report validated the U.S. theory that the Malaysia-bound flight carrying nearly 300 passengers was downed by a Buk surface-to-air missile from separatist-controlled territory.
This report validates what Secretary Kerry first said more than a year ago, and that's that MH17 was shot down by a Buk surface-to-air missile. Secretary Kerry also made clear that the United States detected a missile launch from separatist-controlled territory at the moment of the shootdown, and he drew attention to the verified conversations among separatist leaders bragging about shooting down an aircraft.
When asked by AP reporter Matt Lee how the report could possibly support the theory of the State Department, Toner said,
because it does say that the MH17 was shot down by a Buk missile fired from separatist-controlled territory in eastern Ukraine. And we've said that from day one that...
Well, you've gone a step further, though, and said actually that the separatists were the ones who fired it.
We have, and that's our belief.
I know, but you acknowledge that is not supported by that part of
right. It, is, it does not assign blame. That's fair, Matt. Yeah, but so, we said it, we believe it supports our overall argument that we've made, frankly, since day two of this. Yeah.
RT's Guyan Shichikayan described how the State Department has tried to blame the rebels in East Ukraine and Russia since the plane was taken down in July 2014.
The White House has issued a statement calling the Dutch investigation report an important milestone that will serve as, quote, a basis for further investigation. The statement sounds rather reserved, considering the U.S. had already made up its mind about who to blame for the MH17 downing before any investigation began. This was shortly after the crash.
We saw on social media afterwards, we saw videos, we saw photos of the pro-Russian separatists bragging about shooting down an aircraft. This is from intercepts of separatist communications posted on YouTube by the Ukrainian
government.
Well, is there
anything, okay, is there anything other? Because, you know,
I can keep going if you want to jump in.
Well, is there stuff that's other than social media that.
Yes, absolutely, there is.
So what is it that's other than social
media? At this point, Matt, we've said what our assessment is, very strong assessment publicly. If there's more information that that's based on that we can share, we're happy to do so.
The U.S. has blamed the rebels in eastern Ukraine from the very beginning, but ultimately pointed the finger at Russia. Washington could hardly be impartial here. It was very persistent in supporting the Ukrainian government in its crackdown on the rebels in the east. There was not much questioning here about why Ukraine left the airspace over the war-torn part of its country open for passenger flights, even though days before the crash, the Ukrainian Air Force had been carrying out airstrikes in the region. In order to ask those hard questions, Washington would need to be impartial, and it's anything but.
Western media also immediately put the blame on Russia before a single piece of evidence had been gathered. RT's Daniel Hawkins recalls some of the media's worst offenses.
Innocent until proven guilty, or in the case of Russia's alleged involvement in the MH17 disaster, the other way around. In the hours and days following the tragedy, the mainstream media acted as judge, jury, and executioner before investigators had even reached the crash site. Headlines flashed across TV screens and newspapers, assigning the blame squarely on the Russian government.
CNN has learned investigators of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 say evidence points to pro-Russian rebels. A draft report by the lead crash investigators, the Dutch Safety Board.
Making a quick phone call to confirm the information would seem like common sense. RT made that phone call and received quite different information from the investigators themselves.
The Dutch Safety Board will write the final report about the cause of the crash, which will be published in October. It has nothing to do with the criminal investigation.
These accusations were also taken up by the Ukrainian media, using reports allegedly written by the Dutch prosecution to prove it was a Russian Buk missile that brought down MH17. It took another phone call from RT to clarify that, once again, these headlines were at best misguided, at worst misleading.
I'm not familiar with these reports, but I can say for sure that they are not correct. We are still investigating the plane crash. We are not yet ready to take any conclusion.
Even global media outlets rushed to find the culprit. Reuters claimed an eyewitness had told their reporters off camera that a rocket was fired from rebel-held territory. That same witness told RT he said nothing of the sort. And large media outlets weren't the only ones to claim a monopoly on truth. One British man who runs website Bellingcat used open source evidence such as photos from social media and videos from YouTube to conduct his own investigation. Der Spiegel ran that story on the report which accused Russia of faking MH17 evidence. But the German paper had to make a retraction. The report was taken apart by a forensic expert who dismissed the evidence as completely unreliable. So, regardless of the outcome of the official investigation, it seems the unofficial trial by media has, for the last year, been a foregone conclusion.
In its own press conference Wednesday, a spokesperson for the Russian Foreign Ministry, Maria Zakharova, discussed the many open questions that remain after the issuance of the Dutch Safety Board's report.
When the international community attention is focused on the report, they say that Russia is not cooperating. I would like to emphasize that Holland experts were invited to Russia for further exchange of information, for further collaboration, and they refused to do so. How significant the work of Reservation and Almaz-Antey company that contributed with information? We are still very concerned that the true aims of the Netherlands investigation is to give basis for further blaming. Ukrainian party also didn't provide international community with records of dislocation of their air defense forces and aviation. 1 year following the crash, there are information of debris of a missile that was located in the territory where the crash took place. And before that, we heard that almost all the debris of the plane were gathered together. There are a lot of information now, but you can turn to the Foreign Minister of Russia site and see how the official representative of the Russian foreign ministry spoke that it is strange that the debris is not gathered yet. We invited all the participants of the investigation to pay attention to it, and they told us that they gathered everything that they needed from the place of crash. And now, 1 year later, they say that there are some parts were collected additionally. All that I said is a part of questions that remained on the Russian side. No doubt that Ukraine is directly responsible for not closing their airspace for commercial aviation. A possible outcome is to correct, to further work on the report on the investigation and to provide additional materials that could throw light on the causes of the crash. We are ready for such collaboration.
Paul Craig Roberts is a former U.S. Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. He said Washington is not interested in facts, but using the disaster to keep Russia and Europe from forging closer economic ties.
Don't look for any interest in facts from Washington. The purpose of this entire episode is to embarrass Russia, to demonize Russia, and to use this demonization to install the regime of sanctions. It's a way that Washington can break Europe's economic and political relationships with Russia. That's the purpose of the sanctions, and the downing of the airliner was simply made that easier to do. I think that Washington has achieved its purpose. Its purpose was to demonize Russia and have the sanctions, and that was achieved. So I think Washington will move on, and this so-called investigation, which is a farce, is simply a way to get rid of that problem and go to the next one.
Russia is again stepping up its airstrikes against the Islamic State in Syria. Russian media reported that the total number of bombings rose to 88 over the past 24 hours as of Wednesday. RT's Murad Gazdiev filed this report from Syria Wednesday.
30 tons of metal traveling at 300 kilometers an hour, and all it's got to stop is a city block.
The forces at work are tremendous. Sure, you can stop with just the wheel brakes, but you'll have to change melted tires.
The parachutes themselves, interestingly enough, are made of silk. They also come in varying sizes, depending on how many tons of metal they've got to bring to a halt. But after each landing, the parachutes detach. They're collected, wrapped up, packed in, and fitted for the next mission.
And those missions are coming in thicker and faster. The tempo of Russian airstrikes on jihadists is growing by leaps and bounds. Armories, hideouts, and strongholds lay in tatters nationwide, a fact that many Syrians are celebrating. In the capital, in western Syria, there's near unanimous support for Russian airstrikes, among the public, anyway. Moscow's embassy and hundreds of civilians at this pro-Russian rally were targeted by shelling. While the attack, which constitutes an act of terror, won't raise any eyebrows in Syria, it does go to show that Russian airstrikes are hurting those desperate enough to attack peaceful rallies. Morad Gazdiev, RT, from Latakia, Syria.
Violence is spreading between Palestinians and Israeli military and police, resulting in the deaths of both Palestinians and Israelis. The president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, ordered his security forces to take measures to maintain calm. Palestinian police faced angry protesters in Gaza, as CCTV's Nuhar Azin reported from Gaza Wednesday.
Two Palestinians and three Israelis were killed while dozens were wounded in several stabbing and shooting attacks in Jerusalem and Re'ana near Tel Aviv Tuesday morning. Violence has been escalating between outraged Palestinian protesters and the Israeli forces in East Jerusalem and the West Bank for 3 weeks now over the restrictions imposed by Israel on the entry of Muslim worshippers to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, resulting in dozens of dead and injured on both sides. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Ministry of Health announced Tuesday that the death toll since the beginning of October in clashes that erupted across the Palestinian territories lately has reached up to 30 people killed and more than 1,300 injured in both the West Bank and Gaza. CCTV team met with citizens who collectively stated that the situation will never return as it used to be before this round of clashes unless they feel safe and are granted their rights.
Simply, we have had enough. We have been patient for the past 66 years, and now is our time to stand up and defend ourselves. If you want to know the reason, it's only in one word: occupation. We have had enough.
If the Israeli side thought that we will fear the live and rubber bullets, they are mistaken. We will not stop until we feel some justice, until we Palestinians are granted our rights as humans. 22 years of negotiations did not bring us peace or freedom, so it's time for the people of Palestine to rise up.
A few days back, a president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, has ordered his security forces to take measures to maintain calm. However, the Palestinian police were not able to contain the angry protesters. In the same context, enthusiasm has drawn dozens of youths in Gaza to approach the no-go areas at the border with Israel, leading to the highest death toll since Israel ended its last summer war against the Strip. Nuhar Azin, CCTV, Gaza.
A lawsuit over New York police surveillance of Muslims was reinstated. The NYPD program was exposed in 2011. A U.S. District Court judge had dismissed the case against the surveillance program in 2014, saying the surveillance was directed against terrorism and not Muslims, but the Third Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals voted unanimously to revive the lawsuit. The court said Muslim plaintiffs presented valid claims of religious freedom and equal protection violations under the U.S. Constitution. The plaintiffs say the surveillance subjected them to discrimination, threatened their careers, and caused them to stop attending religious services. Press TV's Colin Campbell has more.
What this shows is that there has been some movement, or at least a little bit more sympathy and compassion when it comes to the Muslim population in New York City and New Jersey, where this program was run. What was happening here is the days after 9/11, many Muslims were profiled in the surrounding areas. And what that meant was there were agents who were profiling not only the places where Muslims worked, but where they went to school, where they worshiped. And of course, this violates constitutional rights for freedom of expression, freedom to express religion, practice religion. And so what this case does now is it looks at the practices of the NYPD and other agencies, and it would seek to ameliorate them, or at least modify them, so that they are done in a less profiling and less discriminatory way.
U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch outraged black activists when she backed off her predecessor's verbal commitment to require that local police send reports to Washington when they kill civilians. Former Attorney General Eric Holder had said that police failure to keep data on lethal use of force was unacceptable, but Lynch said she would rather not get involved in what she called such minutia. Black Agenda Radio's Glenn Ford spoke with Marsha Coleman Adebayo, editor and columnist for Black Agenda Report, and a well-known whistleblower in her own right, who has led demonstrations against the Department of Justice.
When I read the Guardian article, the first idea that popped in my head was, you know, isn't it interesting that less than so many months after Eric Holder has left, we're going to long for the Holder administration to come back? I mean, that really is how horrific her statement is. Under the Eric Holder administration, he had actually recommended, even though there's questions as to whether or not he would have ever implemented it, that police departments are required to report the number of civilian deaths, both armed and unarmed. And the Fraternal Order of Police had come back and basically said, we would also like to have a reporting of how many police are murdered. At that point, Eric Holder said, why not just do both? We'll record the number of civilians that are killed by police, as well as the number of police killed by civilians. Now, this was never implemented, but at least we had an attorney general who felt that there was a need to keep track of the number of citizens that are murdered by police. And so now we have a situation with our new Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, who says that she doesn't think it has to be required, that she believes that this should still be, quote unquote, a voluntary activity, that police departments across the country do not have to report how many people they kill. I mean, it's an extraordinary statement, and I guess she considers it bothersome to demand that these police are held accountable and account for the number of people that they kill. I think we have to juxtapose that to the fact that, you know, there are a lot of requirements around people dying in this country. If a soldier is killed in Afghanistan, Vietnam, wherever, the government is required to report to the family that the soldier is missing or killed or injured. And in fact, if a soldier is killed, they send soldiers to actually break the news in person. We don't have anything like that in this country. So Loretta Lynch is saying that, quite frankly, that there's a difference between the way they treat certain segments of this society. If you're just a regular citizen, there's no demand. She doesn't believe that police departments should be required to report the number. But if you're a soldier, she would dare not say that it should be voluntary, whether the government informs the family of a fallen soldier that the soldier died on the battlefield. It's an extraordinary statement, extraordinary.
Yes, she told The Guardian that she didn't want to be reaching down and telling local police departments how they should handle the minutiae of record keeping, as if the death of civilians in police custody is minutiae.
Well, not only that, but it harkens back almost to states' rights, right? You know, where the federal government was saying, you know, I don't want to get involved in what's happening in Mississippi, and I don't want to get involved in what's happening in Alabama. The folks in Mississippi and Alabama will take care of their Negro problem. So it's extraordinary, again, for this political class to be saying that she doesn't want to stoop so low as to tell a local police department or demand that they report to the federal government how many citizens are being murdered by police officers. It really is quite extraordinary. And I think on that basis alone, someone in the Black Caucus or someone in Congress should have called for her to step down.
Especially because Congress this year did pass Congressman Bobby Scott's Death in Custody Reporting Act, which right. does require police departments to make those kinds of reports and does give the Attorney General the option to move towards cutting off funds to those police departments. But that gives a lot of leeway to the Attorney General, and this particular one doesn't seem quite interested in pursuing that kind of pressure against police.
When we have a president who felt that he was too big, that his office would somehow be diminished by going to Ferguson, Missouri, you know, where an unarmed Black boy just walking down the street was murdered by police. And as far as I know, I don't think he's gone to any, he didn't go to Baltimore. I mean, you know, so again, this looking down and saying, I don't want to get involved in the inertia part of this process. Let me sort of stay above the fray. It seems to me to be a pattern in this administration, but they don't want to hear it. They don't want to see it. They don't want to smell it. They just want it to just disappear. And what we've seen a couple of weeks ago with a young Black guy being murdered in a wheelchair, the police are emboldened by the Obama administration's decision just to look the other way while they commit murder and destroy our community and destroy our families.
While this administration, President Obama, the former Attorney General Eric Holder, they are quite eager to take credit for things such as the release pending later this month of 6,000 federal prison inmates who've been convicted, most of them under the infamous 100-to-1 crack cocaine possession laws.
Right. It's again one of those PR stunts that our community should really be quite insulted about. This is a situation where the government has imprisoned, and we don't know how, in terms of that 6,000 number, we don't know how many African Americans, how many whites are going to be released under that program. So it could be 50-50 when we make up the vast majority of the people in prison, which would be unfair, or it could even be worse than that, I suppose. But nevertheless, you know, you're looking at 6,000. Let's assume that all 6,000 are African Americans who were entrapped by this law. We still have another million Black people, and I think Black men, in prison. So 6,000 is just a drop in the bucket. And I think Obama had a HBO special in which, you know, he's looking sympathetic to these young men who've had their lives stolen by these kind of draconian laws. 6,000 is a drop in the bucket. And I think we should be insulted by that figure. The demand has to be release. Release our brothers and our sons and our brothers and our husbands. Release them now. That has to be the demand. And we don't mean release, you know, a couple here and there. We mean release the men in prison who were incarcerated under these draconian laws, as well as the marijuana laws. We need all these men released immediately, and they should, in fact, receive reparations for the time that they spent in prison. They should be compensated for that time in prison. The reality is that the incarceration is a war against Black people, and it's one of the issues that I keep raising in my Black Agenda report articles, is that when you incarcerate a million people of a certain group, that is an act of war. That is an act of war. And the only reason why we don't see mass incarceration as an act of war is because of this notion that we're all in this together, we're all Americans, and that something went wrong as opposed to the system fulfilling its mission. But on top of all of that, releasing 6,000 people, even if they're all Black, is still totally and completely an insult to the Black community.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.